We are on the sixth day of the retreat together. And I suspect the 2005 retreat in Bodh Gaya is going to be remembered as the rains retreat. And in just over 30 years of teaching here in the Thai monastery, first year was 1975, I can't recall such wet weather. This is the wettest I've ever seen. It isn't unusual in the earlier part of January to have maybe a day of rain, and often that doesn't come. But to have it one day after the next, and now we're on February the 1st, is extremely unusual. And having some breakfast this morning with Sister Mary, a good friend of the dispossessed and the poor in and around Bodh Gaya, she tells me that other places and parts of India are also experiencing unusually severe rainfalls, and all the consequences in various ways of that. And that really is a challenge, I know, for each and every one of us, and in fact more so for you than ourselves. We teachers, we managers, are well aware of our privileges of the kitchen, of having our own room, myself up there in the penthouse suite. Currently a small river running down one side of it, but of course unusual forms of air conditioning. So in response to that, it's a challenge, I know, for many of you in a whole variety of ways. And sometimes with that, it's a challenge to our life to endeavour to stay as firm, clear, resolved and steady amidst all the difficulties of it. Of course, you and I can sit and compare ourselves and feel perhaps how fortunate we are compared to countless numbers of others in the villages and in the town here, but comparing rarely gives much comfort. I think it's much more, this is a situation that we find ourselves in. It's a difficult one to be with, morning, noon and night. It's not as you and I would like it to be, but this is how it is. Can I stay firm, resolved and steady despite everything that's going on? And there's often enough to deal with in one's own inner life, past and present, let alone having to deal with what's going on around. One of the features of this, of course, is the health issue, and how easy it can be given the climate, energy drops, tiredness because of unrest and not enough sleep at night. That also means a bit more vulnerable to the coughs and the colds. If you need some medication, we have a medical manager, and its whole purpose is to give support to everyone. Please just go and talk to her, tell her how you feel, tell her what the condition is, and she will respond and try to get the appropriate medicine for you. Make use of the resource. I spoke with Caroline a little while ago. Some of you I know with the clothes, they're damp, your towels are damp. After lunch today, we'll keep the fires going. If you need something drying, and rather importantly and urgently, towels or clothes, we're going to set up some lines in the kitchen, use the fire, and to dry your clothes as quickly as possible. This afternoon, instead of the minimalist in terms of the afternoon tea, we have some miso, so there'll be some miso soup and some one or two other goodies I hear. It won't turn it from hell into heaven, but it might soften the blow a little bit there. Also, with regard to the hall itself and all the adjustments that you need to make, if whether you're one of the women enduring it out there on the veranda with the cold and the damp coming through, if you feel you need to use the meditation hall for sleep anytime, at the end of the day in night hours, just bring your sleeping bag in here. It's another thing too, and sleep in here. If you're in the tent over there, etc., then do use the hall and make use of the resource here, so that we're using the resources as much as possible. Could you turn that light off there for me? Can it? Lovely. Also, to take care with water and electricity, take very serious care with this, because of the electrical system is hardly five star, and so whether you're in the toilets or in your room, just take care. When you touch the switch, just try to touch the end of the switch. Don't put your hand all over the switch. You could easily get a shock. Sometimes the electricity in this state is so bad that once, three or four years ago, it went off, the current came on with such a force, every single bulb smashed and blew into smithereens. Anybody who's been near a bulb would have could have been cut to pieces. Welcome to Bihar. So it takes some endurance, staying steady with it. With regard to the being in the hall here as well, number of you, plenty of you, both people new to the Dharma as well as those who have wealth of experience, just love the silence. And it's a community, it's a sangha of silence as well. That, in spite of the conditions, health conditions, energy conditions, environmental conditions, as well as the inner one, does take from us some real care and attention with regard to the silence. And so I'd just like to address that for a moment or two. If you feel your health is generating a lot of sniffing, sneezing, coughing and colds, etc., do consider, out of consideration for others as well as yourself, to give a little time, perhaps to some quiet time outside. Give yourself a little bit more freedom and flexibility with this, so that the maximum amount of silence can be preserved. It's very easy at the end of the sitting that all the coughing and sniffling gets stored up until the end of the sitting, and then it's just like a TB ward in here. So when that the time comes at the end of the sitting as well, please, as much as possible, keep the silence. There are people who are coming in here to sit in early. There are people in here who are sitting long after most of us have left the hall. And there isn't any reason why from the early part before the sitting starts, throughout the duration of the sitting and after the sitting there, that the silence is really palpable. And that does require from us a great deal of care, a great deal of respect. So as we enter into the hall, we come in silently as possible. When we leave the hall, we leave as silently as possible. So for the sitting sangha who wishes to stay in here. In the process of the day, that means of the meditations themselves, I would just like to go over with you the general instructions, referring to breathing, referring to working with the body, and with working with the immediacy of conditions, because coughs and colds and the condition of the mind are not two independent separate events. They are mutually linked together. So we're on the sixth day of the retreat. I'd like to speak to you fairly specifically and concretely about the process of the meditations, for you to remember to look to see, as it were, where you are with the sequence and with the process, and then you listen to yourself with regard to this. on the first day of the retreat, the initial meditation instructions that were given were instructions which highlighted for us the importance and the value of mindfulness of breathing. We can make the breath a bit longer and deeper to keep in touch with the body. Our attention most easily wanders on the outgoing breath, so it is worthwhile and valuable to give extra care and extra attention to the exhalation. We want to experience the breath as much as possible in its fullness. That means when we are drawing in the air, we feel it passing through our nose, going down into our throat, going down into our lungs, and we can experience the breath as the air element enters into the body, and then from entering into the body it releases itself. If it's a little difficult being with the breath for all the kind of reasons, sometimes the use of the hands can be helpful. And what I mean by that is one could put, for example, one hand on the chest, another hand on the stomach, and just use the hands as a reminder as we experience the changes in the body as we breathe in and as we breathe out. We just feel the body expanding and contracting with the hands as an extra support to feel the steadiness of the breathing. In the mindfulness of the breathing practice, at times there are some moments before the next in-breath comes in. We breathe in, we breathe out. The body may not require any air for some moments. So easily the mind can then, at that point, start to wander and drift away. So we stay steady, we're patient, we just allow the next in-breath to come in when it needs to come in. We may find the amount of oxygen that we need can go down quite significantly over the period of the sitting. Carbon dioxide, what we release back into the air, also of course will go down as well. And we're just experiencing then the in-breath and the out-breath when the body needs to breathe in and when the body needs to breathe out. The attention, the quality of the mindfulness, will help to reveal to us all the subtlety of the changes that are taking place with an in-breath and with an out-breath. And we will wish to give total interest and total attention to living on this earth in the moment and just one breath. To really experience one breath totally. And then to experience another breath totally. Total attention, total light on organic life, breathing in and breathing out. It's a practice which contributes to calmness, to reduction of stress, to relaxation, to being a conscious and present human being, to the harmony of body and mind, to deep absorptions in life, to great clarity. Sometimes, of course, and regularly, the attention moves away from the breath. What happens? Can we be clear with what happens when we are not with the breath? Is it memory, planning, irritation, daydream, fantasy, thoughts about another, a personal story, whatever? And to be as clear as possible, what is going on in the inner life when one is not with the breath? Be completely clear about it, not indulging in it, not justifying it, not reinforcing it. To be clear, see it clearly, and then bring the attention immediately back to the breath to get established with the breathing once again. So our interest in the process of mindfulness of breathing is with the breath and what is going on for us when we are not with the breath, because this is our life, there is no other life. This is it. We've also spoken about the importance of giving care and attention to the body. Clearly, much of the our concerns in life and sometimes our worries and anxieties pleasures and pains are very much associated with what's happening physically. And how easy the mind can obsess, particularly around the view of health and sickness, sickness and health. As a feature of the meditation practice for calmness and insight, in working with the body, there are two or three ways, amongst several, which might be very helpful and useful to work with. Because again, we want to see body as body, organic life just as organic life, free from all the fretting and the fears and anxieties and projections that we might be putting on it, particularly if we're not feeling very well. In that turning the attention to the body, we want to be in touch with the body as organic life. One way is just moving the attention through the body and really experiencing the body. Really experiencing vibrations, sensations, the experience of physical life in its bare, bare actuality. In that giving of attention to the body, it's a whole realm of variety of sensations and tingling and throbbing and aches and pains and warmth and comfort and discomfort. All that is body life. It is body life. Easily upon the body life comes all the mentality. It can show itself in terms of issues around gender or age or size or shape or colour or complexion or whatever it might be. And all of that is what, as it were, we put onto the body. The body itself doesn't know that. It's what the mind has put onto it. The body itself is vibration, is organic existence, the sensations and throbbings and pulsations all going on, and that's revealed as body. In giving of the attention to the body, it's an important vehicle to really establish and ground the consciousness. So that consciousness and the bare event of body as organic life have a moment-to-moment relationship together. Very clear, very firm, and very, very steady. In that establishing of a very firm relationship with the body, it not only helps to see the body clearly, it helps to see the body of life clearly. It helps to see what's going on around clearly as well. There is also another aspect to the attention to the body, is a way of looking which is not fixed so much with ego. What I mean by that is that we sit, we give real sensitive care, but not with control, I'll talk about that in a minute or two. We give real sensitive care to the silence and the stillness of the body. And perhaps for the first time in our life, to really sit and be utterly still. As the great Dharma teachers of past and present have often said, that we are so still and we are so silent, nothing of the body moves intentionally, because if it does, it disturbs the world of 10,000 things. And there's something deeply spiritual and deeply mystical when a human being, as I say, sometimes for the first time, is willing to be so utterly still and utterly silent and totally with the moment and with the body, and just to rest in that. Not knowing what it means, not knowing if there's any outcome, not knowing if anything develops or anything changes, but there's an utter silence, an utter stillness, and to move one's little finger is to do far too much. One has just lost it. This comes more easily and more naturally through the calm cultivation of the practice. And I hope that in the course of these sitting meditations, we will remember and we will ensure this utter silence of being. Because something of truth can be steady for us in a way which talking can't do, ideation cannot do, ideas cannot do, memories cannot do, but something of silence and stillness can, as it were, do for us. The vulnerability and the difficulty with this is that the self can come in and try to control the stillness. And it often happens, and it's not unusual, that the dedicated meditator, she or he, in the wish to be silent and the wish to be still, starts to put extra pressure on oneself. This easily becomes a form of control, and then this subsequently begins to generate some intensity. And the mind, for the meditator, easily identifies with intensity and thinks intensity is a sign of going deep. It's not, it's only a sign of intensity. And because of the intensity in our lives, and sometimes a neurotic identification with intensity, or a spiritual identification with intensity, we start to become more intense and more controlling. So we want to know, what would be the signs, what would be some kind of signals for us that there's intensity at work? Sometimes it's because of the past. One's been on some 10-day retreats, one's done intensive meditation or whatever. One hasn't recognized the amount of control over the body or the mind that's taking place. We haven't recognized the amount of pressure that we are putting on ourselves. And the intensity has built up. And then it's kind of stayed around because one's identified with the intensity. One comes into a retreat, and despite all of the reminders about relaxed way of being as an expression of wisdom, the intensity just comes back in. Or we may have no history of meditation, so then it's engaged in here. One of the signs of this is often, if it's more form, the intensity, some shaking in the body. Nearly always a sign of too much control, either in the present going on or in the past. And then we can delude ourselves in thinking, oh, something's going on, I must be working something out. No, no. It's just pressure. It's intensity. Sometimes the intensity shows itself in a feeling of contraction, quite often in the chest or in the stomach area. Again, putting too much pressure on oneself, too much the act of will, the body will begin to protest against it. And one will have the view once again, oh, I must be working something out, my old samkaras are not working them out. No, 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 one's creating them, not working them out, quite the opposite. So again, it's as the Buddha pointed out, it's calm and insight. Relaxed way of being to settle into the stillness. Of course, at times, with the body, we may need to move. It can be done as a reaction, which again disturbs the world of 10,000 things, or it can be done mindfully and consciously, so that in the movement it's so subtle and so conscious that in that movement there isn't a disturbance. There's a qualitative difference between a movement which is mindful and a movement which is to escape, to get away from. And we're interested, 6th day of the retreat, remember, we are interested in such a subtle perception of things that if we do, we'll pick up a lot more in life. Because we're going, as the teachings point out so regularly, from gross to subtle. And everybody in the hall and outside can contribute very, very directly to a subtle sense of life beyond reactivity, where the real things matter. So take for example, we're sitting and after a period of time we're experiencing some pain in the body. Nobody can be protected from pain. The Buddha spoke of the pain that he experienced in the back in meditation. Enlightened and totally enlightened is no guarantee that there will be no pain, physical pain in the life at all. So we experience some pain. And, which I referred to a few days ago, the quality of attention and the relaxed relationship to it matters greatly. So we've got a strong pain in the shoulder. Back is really hurting. Knees seem to be screaming at one or whatever. And the quality of attention that we give in that time, just turn the attention to the area and just see if we can relax into the area. And the key thing with the pain is it's vital to keep noticing the changes. No pain has real continuity to it. It gets stronger and weaker. The location, place varies in one place to another, even in the space of a few centimeters. This attention to pain helps to expand our pain consciousness, helps us to deal with the uncomfortable and the difficult, gives a lot of strength to the mind if we're approaching it in a clear and relaxed way. Sometimes, in turning the attention there, we just approach it very, very gradually. What is this phenomenon? Looking into it, seeing the changes from above, from below, from the side, from the very epicenter of the pain. So that we're not living in fear, because fear is the inability to deal with pain. Actually attending to it. It may be that our wisdom says, I need to move. Fine. Mindfully, slowly. One can move so mindfully and slowly, even if it's stretching out the leg, there is no disturbance. The quality of presence and interest is so steady and so subtle that one knows it is not a reaction. It's the wisdom of movement. And in that wisdom of the movement that takes place, it's not only not disturbing for us, but also for those people who are sitting close and near to us. Similarly, we may have a cough and we feel like coughing. If one's got practice, it's quite possible, with the quality of attention, to look and to see, where is the irritation? Where is it? Is it in the throat? Is it in the chest? What part of the body? Can I turn my attention to the very epicenter of that irritation, explore it, be with it, feel it through, and use the power of attention to dissolve the cough, the irritation? Could the power of the attention in a relaxed way, looking into it before it reaches the stage of this outburst of coughing which disturbs others and oneself, that I can use power of attention just to work with it and dissolve it? And maybe that same practice and that same kind of focus on an irritation, maybe there are other things in my life which I need to give the same quality of attention to dissolve an irritation. The Buddha said that this body contains this world. Our relationship to the body tells us about our relationship to the body, but it tells us about our relationship to everything else. How could it be any different? It's an object of attention. Sometimes, in the working with the body, as part of that exploration of it as it is, it might require and does require from us an ability to see with our I and my. When we see with I and my, we say, oh, my body, I am sitting here, this is happening to me, this is affecting me, my body is like this, and we get used to that. But it's only an interpretation. What about seeing the body just as the body, just as organic life? There's no rejection, there's no detachment, there's no distancing ourselves from it. That's what happens with all our projections on the body. When we're alienated from the body, then we have all the worries and fears and ups and downs in our relationship to it. But if we see body as body, really connect with the body as it is in the moment, that relationship doesn't have ego in it. And it's an intimate relationship then, because you haven't got all these layers of projections upon it. And in that, the consciousness, being conscious, meets the body. as organic life, as the interaction of elements, as this remarkable thing to be alive in this world with all the extraordinary sensitivities of this dynamic organism, and one's totally with it. So we're working with the breath, we're giving care and attention to the body, perhaps moving the attention through the body, perhaps going to the particular locations where there's pain in the body, perhaps seeing the pain and recognizing all the non-pain that's taking place. Pain isn't everywhere, it's never possible, it's always localized. And sometimes when we're sitting and there's no pain, there's no desire to change, there's no struggle going on, sometimes in that silence and in that the beauty of just the stillness of things, there's just life. Not my life, not what I am, not who I am, just life on this earth, sitting on this earth in the sangha of the silence. And those moments are important, and those moments are precious. Perhaps those moments will inform us more about what matters than all the knowledge we've accumulated. At times, as you report with the small group meetings, feelings arise. Sometimes people are a little shocked about the strength of the feelings and the emotions that come. Some of you have said in the small groups to me and in the one-to-ones and with the other teachers, for all the difficulties, they can be going along very well. Sometimes there's some lovely sense of depth and presence and joy and insight. And then, and often within 24 hours or so, there can be like a huge upheaval. How is it that I was so steady and calm and happy to be here, and then suddenly all hell breaks loose inside? And some incident in one's life, some story, some event, or what's going on around, all the intensities and frustrations and the disappointments and sadnesses, suddenly just start rushing through. And it feels like that the experiences of being overwhelmed by feelings, drowning in a sea of feelings, and one wonders, how did it come? Where did it all come from? And we quite often forget that in our practice and in our meditation, that we, because we're becoming more conscious, more so than what we realize, we're actually generating more space inside. And that sense of attention too is putting more space around things, putting more space into things. And in that space that we're generating within ourselves, and we have deep love of deep inner space, in that space that we're generating in ourselves, it will give the opportunity for that which has been ignored, hasn't been attended to come through. And sometimes it comes through very strongly, and sometimes emotionally, very, very painfully. And one just wonders, my God, I'm just so overwhelmed with all these feelings and tears and anguish and frustration and disappointment. All sorts of ways start kind of pouring on top of one. This is feeling life. At times there's nothing you can do. Just have to live it. Can't get back to the breath. Seems very hard to stay with the body. Sometimes the strength of the feelings are such it's just impossible, and understandably so, to stay in the meditation hall. One has to get up and just be outside and take a walk and just, as the Buddha said, feel the feeling in the feeling. This is Vedana ne Vedana. He said, feel this feeling in the feeling. Just be with the feeling and don't think one can control it, organize it, whatever. Just be with it. Feel this feeling without fighting. Not an easy task. Sometimes, in any of the postures, the feelings may be flowing. Often, and mostly, but not always, there may not be any story with it. Sometimes we have a feeling, there's a whole story that's going on with the feeling. Of course there is. But sometimes it's just a rush without any story. The important aspect of this is not the story, It's the feeling itself. So part of the practice, particularly dealing with difficult feelings, is can we come to the feeling inside the body, and I mean it, inside the body that we are feeling. The tendency is to either get lost in the story or to be asking myself, why do I feel like this? And then the mind is looking around and trying to give some explanation for it. None of the explanations ever seem satisfactory. Haven't we ever learnt this? So rather than trying to say, what's the cause? Why am I feeling like this? And then the mind coming in, trying to get an answer, or getting completely lost in the story, please give up the story as much as possible and give up trying to ask where it came from. As the Buddha said, it's like someone in the forest who is shot with an arrow. And the arrow's landed. The arrow's inside, one's hurt, one's pain, one's angry, one's upset, one's frustrated, one's disappointed. One is not saying with that arrow inside, oh, where did the arrow come from? What wood was it made from? One's only got one primary interest, not how, direction, or who's fired it, or whatever. How the hell did it, what's it doing in here? Get it out quickly. So we're not interested in how or why. We're not interested in the story. Somewhere in the fire of the pain and the anguish and the emotion, we can only put the fire out by going to the fire. Not trying to explain things away. That means if we're feeling some way, this is to see the feeling in the feeling here, turning the attention not to the outer body, but feel inside the body. Sometimes, but not for all, is it in the chest? Is it in the throat? Is it in the stomach? Is it in the diaphragm? Wherever. And see, quietly and gently, can I just come to that place, or places sometimes, where I'm just feeling this? Feeling this upsurge, this wave. I may not be able to do it in the meditation hall. I start to get close to it, and then it rushes upon me again. So I may have to do it with let the energy flow a little bit by being outside and walking. I may have to go out in the garden or whatever and dance to get the energy moving that way. With a view. Not to avoidance, but to coming back to the body, to within, inside, not outside. Yeah, it's important this. Inside the body. Let me feel that place. Even after the wave of pain or anguish has gone away, even after it's gone away, I still want to be going to that place where it came from. Sometimes it's right in the very pit of one's stomach. It's really deep down in there. But our putting of the attention to that, without force or without willpower, gently, gently into that area, the quality of the attention, with sensitivity and with respect, will heal any problem, because depth of peace is always, without exception, deeper than all suffering. Suffering can be deep, but it's never as deep as truth. It's never as deep as liberation. It's never as deep as profound peace. It can go deep. It can go deep into the cells, we know that. But we can go deeper than that. Quite often, the continuity of our anguish and suffering in life is because we've ignored it. Because we haven't come to the root. We haven't come to the depth. And we need the quality of all the ordinariness of mindfulness, of breathing, and being in the moment, and all the non-special practices where it seems quite ordinary and nothing much is happening. But my God, we need the quality of attention and the quality of mindfulness for those moments when life is a storm, and we want to see, I want to get deeper than the storm. I don't want to spend my life wandering around in the delusion of personal stories as though that's all what life is about. I don't want to spend my life trying to explain why I am like I am, and realizing it's never made a scrap of difference, all my explanations. I want to get deep. Because in the depth, it's a challenge, but in the depth too is the fragrance. in the depth is the liberation. Sometimes in the flow of the day, sitting, walking, standing and reclining, in spite of lack of sleep, damp clothes, smelly toilets, old apples, or whatever, and despite of oneself, sometimes the people sitting in the hall hardly notice the weather. Don't mind, wet, dry, probably born in England. And and so the day of the flow and the rhythm is flowing on, and there's a lot of natural joy, natural happiness, silence and stillness, and such people in the hall are great inspiration for all of us. And sometimes as the day goes by, you and I look around and we see and we and recognize the yogis who just quietly, despite everything, just quietly get on with their practice. Very beautiful to watch and to witness, and very encouraging for every one of us. In such times, if that's your experience, method and technique get less and less and less and less important. You don't have to push yourself, don't have to use a lot of willpower, nor kind of enter into any kind of control in any way whatsoever. But in your silence and in your stillness, there may be coming out of the cells, not only out of the heart and out of the mind, natural joy, a deep sense of peace and calm. It's not to make that itself the end in any way. Even though there's a depth of calm and depth of connectedness and sense of deep presence and well-being, beautiful and profound that it is, still we want to be listening. Listening outwardly, of course, to teachings, but essentially as well, listening inwardly. What is being revealed here? What is this showing? What's this indicating about the truth of life or truths of life? And so just as much as there is to be discovered in the movement, pain is a movement, states of mind and thoughts are a movement, waves of feelings are a movement, but there's also as much in the non-movement. And sometimes we forget this, and if we're not clear, the calmness and the quality of that calm presence, and sometimes with joy in it, mind can start to come in and it says, oh, I feel stuck. Oh, sometimes it gets a bit boring. Oh, nothing is happening. And then the mind is looking for movement because it just can't, the depth, the realizations are not coming through about what is this non-movement, where there's nothing to do, there's nowhere to go, there's nothing to gain, there's nothing to have, there's nothing to hold on to. What's all that about? Where there's no desire, there's absolutely no wanting anything from oneself, nor wanting anything from anybody else. And one's just in that awareness of utter not wanting. What's to be revealed when there's no wanting? Ego can't do that. Self can't do that because self only wants. So in those times, when the meditation, sitting, walking, standing and reclining, has that kind of quality to it and has that kind of presence to it, if the meditation method and technique has been useful and has been dropped freely, and we need to drop it freely, then in that there's no particular pointing of the attention to an object. The world of objects doesn't matter so much. You and I live in the delusion that objects matter. What you see, hear, smell, taste, touch, think, feel, storyline, views, causes, could matter. What really matters is not that which is revealed. What really matters is that which is revealing it all. Wow. And we, in our foolishness as creatures on this earth, have become so infatuated with the object and put so much onto it, him, this, that and the other, we have completely lost sight of the extraordinary element of light which is revealing the revealed. Therefore I say meditation methods and techniques can drop away. Trying to focus on one object can drop away. In our silence and in our stillness, there's just that which is revealing. Could that which is revealing reveal more than just objects? Usually we say, I give attention to breath, it reveals the breath. I give attention to sights, it reveals the sights. I give attention to smells, it reveals the smells. I give attention to thoughts, it reveals the thoughts, the feelings, etc., etc. Could that light which is revealing all that reveal more than that? To the degree it enlightens me. There's no hierarchy in the meditations. There's wisdom only. It's the wisdom to work with the breath that may be appropriate, skillful, wise, and necessary. If so, if you see that's your experience and that's the priority now, give attention to the breath. Maybe necessary to give attention to the body, whether it's pain in the body, full awareness of the whole body and just watching I and my arise around it and notice those times when it's not around it. Give attention to the feeling life. Feel deep, deep, deep with the feeling, gently, firmly. Have the freedom to move the posture silently and sensitively and respectfully for oneself and others. Have the freedom to sit, walk, stand, have no particular object. But it's not a daydream, it's not wandering around from one thing to another, it's total presence. But one's not trying to keep on the object. One's interested in that which reveals the revealed. So we have to see here, through our experience, what matters for us, what works for us, what contributes to calm and insight, what contributes to wisdom, and especially what contributes to truly waking us up. So let's have 15 minutes till 10:15 of some meditation, some silence together.